That is honestly the biggest thing we hear from people is that, oh my God, I thought I was the only one who experienced this. They feel like they can't talk about it at work because there's so much stigma. It's like, oh, if I'm burnt out, I must be weak, or I can't handle the workload, or whatever negative thing you want to say about yourself. So I think for other women, creating that space where they can really talk about whatever they're facing, knowing they're not alone. But I think also for us, we really try to like not be like toxic positivity, obviously not, but really try to focus on the positive and have that sort of optimism and hope. Because I think there's a lot of burnout workshops on there that are like, these are the signs and symptoms of burnout. And it's kind of like fear mongering of, you know, what it could do to you. Versus we're much more like, yes, that's there, but like, what can we do to add more joy? Or how can you take off that pressure from yourself? Or how can you actually make time for self-care?
Hi, I'm Diana, certified career strategist, leadership, and sales coach. Welcome to the Spotlight Project, where you'll be listening to a one-time, raw, and unfiltered career conversation of everyday people willing to share their stories. This podcast is being recorded on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Spotlight Project podcast, where we shine a spotlight on people's unique career stories. I'm your host, Diana Chung, and I'm here today with Danielle LaRue. Danielle, am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
LaRue. You were very close.
LaRue. I was close. I need to add the accent on there. LaRue. Danielle, I'm so excited to have you here. Just a little background for the audience on Danielle, and she's going to give a bit of her own bio and intro. But Danielle is a certified life and leadership coach with a background in communications and community building. She's also the current co-founder of She Summits, along with her partner, Laura. She Summits is an online platform helping women combat against stress and burnout and finding ways that they can unlock their joy and thrive both inside and outside of work. I know that sounds very meaty, so we're excited to get into it and what that means for Danielle and her organization. She's also a huge fan of hiking. Loves the great outdoors. I read on your bio, you're an oat latte connoisseur. So I add that.
Yes. even when I just got back from Japan, drink a lot of oat milk lattes in Japan.
And Japan's really good with the coffee, which we should save for another day.
And really good oat milk. I was impressed.
And really good oat milk. So double whammy. And Danielle and I, we've actually formed a friendship over time. We met when I was one of your panelists for one of the workshops you hosted for She Summit about building side hustles while holding onto your corporate job. And since then, yeah. I've been so happy that you and I have connected and gotten coffees and lattes.
Likewise.
And talked about business and life. So welcome, Danielle. This was a long spiel bio, but welcome. I'm so happy to have you here today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Awesome. We're really excited to dig in. I think you're going to have a lot of insights around careers and pivots and transitions. I know you've gone through many of them in your career today.
Yeah, for sure.
So looking forward to digging in. I know I gave a little bit of your own bio, but I'd love for you to introduce yourself to the audience, tell us your pronouns, and maybe describe what it is you do for work and your job.
So my name is Danielle. My pronouns are she, her. I live in Vancouver, grew up in Toronto, where I am currently recording this podcast from, been here for some events. You did a great job introducing me. Anything else I would add? I actually am also the founder of a previous company, Renew Retreats, doing hiking retreats for women. I'm passionate about the outdoors, empowering women, connecting women with each other and themselves. As far as for what I do with She Summits, well, I feel like as co-founder, you do a lot of different things. These days, I would say a lot of it is to do with like strategy, building the business, a lot of communications and marketing, community building, doing different events, for sure sales, a lot of building relationships, different partnerships. So much variety, which I'm sure we'll get into later, but is a big reason why I was drawn to entrepreneurship.
Absolutely. I was going to say the marker of a true entrepreneur is you just do all the things, wear all the hats. I think that's true of any entrepreneur, right?
Totally.
And we're going to get into it later because with a lot of the entrepreneurs I've brought on the podcast, we talk a lot about the upsides to entrepreneurship, the things you see on social media, the glorification of it, but also I wouldn't say the dark side, but kind of the dark side too, right? Because there's always trade-offs.
Just the reality.
Yeah, that's way better wording. Thank you. The reality of what it's like. So we'll get into all that. But first, Danielle, so I know I mentioned this to you before you got on the call, but Before we get into your career and your job and your background and how you became co-founder of She Summits, I often like to start with this with meeting the person.
Yeah.
And who you are, because so much of people's backgrounds, the way they grew up, the types of values that they had, you know, in their family unit,
for sure,
typically lend itself to how you chose to do the work that you do. So I'm going to take you back in time to the early years. Doesn't have That's to good. Be your birth.
That's good, because I do not remember that.
Don't remember your birth. But I do want to talk a little bit about your upbringing in Ontario. I know you're an Ontario native before you moved out to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And a little bit about your upbringing as well, and maybe some of your family dynamic that might have played into your career. So maybe tell us about, what was your upbringing like over in Ontario? What did that family unit look like? If we were to peer into your upbringing, what would we have seen?
Yeah. So I grew up in Etobicoke, which is like the west end of Toronto. You know, a very nuclear family, mom, dad, and me and my sister, who's 5 years younger than I am. And yeah, I mean, I think I know in hindsight now, I think I was very lucky. My mom actually stayed at home all up until I was in grade 10 in high school. And so as much as I took it for granted then, I think to have both parents were so involved in everything that we were doing, I'm grateful for now. But yeah, I was actually really involved with music from a very young age. So I started playing the piano, I think in grade 3, and then the flute in grade 6, did the stereotypical, like went to band camp, which is like so funny now.
Oh my God, that is the best.
Lots of jokes and played the flute, you know, that's like a whole other thing. And then I actually went to an arts high school. So in Toronto, there's a couple of schools that are dedicated to the arts. So you audition and get in, but I always laugh because it was so far from a typical high school experience. Like, you didn't have to take gym until grade 12, and we like bowled and played bocce ball. So that gives you kind of an idea to my like athleticism in high school. But besides that, yeah, I think, you know, I was in like the gifted program and always a good student. And I think probably had definitely a strong work ethic, put a lot of pressure on myself to do well. But yeah, I mean, had really supportive and involved parents. And yeah, that's kind of sort of it in a nutshell.
Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't know you had that musical background. That's so fun. Do you still practice music? Do you still play the flute, play the piano?
Not too much. Yeah. So I did arts all throughout high school. And at the end of grade 12, I was like, I am done with music. I don't want to do this anymore. And my parents were like, okay, whatever. And so I ended up going to Mount Allison University in Sackville, New Brunswick. It's a great school in this tiny town. And I decided to major in psychology. And my parents, you know, to give them credit, I think they're thinking like, oh my God, like this is a terrible idea, but do what you want to do. And it is the only time I have almost failed a class in my entire life. I almost failed physics. I like had to get a tutor. And my roommates actually staged an intervention to get me to switch to music.
Interesting.
I lasted a semester in like the Bachelor of Science program and ended up doing a Bachelor of Music at school. So I played it all throughout university. And then I played a little bit when I got to Vancouver because I've always taught piano and flute growing up. And then I actually sold my flute, oh my God, probably like 4 years ago, to pay for business coaching. So that was the end of the flute. And then I taught piano for a while in Vancouver, but when I was growing up, I'd always taught piano out of like my parents' basement. And so it's so convenient, people coming to you. In Vancouver, I would go to people's houses, and it was just a very, very different experience. And so I gave that up like probably like, you know, 5-7 years ago.
Yeah. Interesting though. How do you think your musical background, what has your musical background done for you? Does it, you do approach business with more creativity? Cause it's also a very disciplined.
Yeah. Very analytical. Yeah. Like I do think about this often. I think from an entrepreneurship side, it's quite funny because when you're like in high school making like $40 an hour teaching piano, that's like pretty good compared to someone working at like the Gap. So it's sort of funny to think that I was an entrepreneur since like grade 9 or whenever I started teaching piano. I think, you know, definitely discipline for sure. I think, and also you have to practice a lot as a music student, and there's not really anyone telling you to do it per se. Creativity, I think, like analytical thinking. As much as I don't think, I mean, actual skills I learned in school for university are that helpful now. I think just sort of the type of thinking, was really beneficial. And plus, I'm also just glad that I loved my university experience, even if I don't really do music anymore. I do think a lot, even with She Summits, so much of it doesn't quite feel like teaching, but there's a lot of similarities between like teaching someone the flute and the piano and coaching even.
Absolutely.
So it's fun to see how those things have carried through.
Yeah, very interesting. That's so interesting. And you talked a little bit about, I guess, your nuclear family. So your mom, dad, sister being, for lack of a better word, more of the conventional standard way we think about, I guess, gender norms and also the nuclear families. But I also heard in there you talk a little bit about this sort of achieving, over-functioning mentality.
Yeah.
Can you talk about, I mean, was that something you were innately born with? You're like, I'm just coded to be an overachiever. Or was some of this expectation from parents? Like, I guess I wonder where the starting line is to that.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think probably a combination of things. I think my parents have always been very good at what they do. So my dad had a really successful career in like commercial real estate. And my mom actually went back to work into a totally new career when I was in, I think, grade 10 or 11. So she actually went back to school. And then she ended up working for a shelter for homeless youth and like fundraising, volunteer management. Even when she was staying at home, she was so involved in the community, like in Girl Guides, all this volunteering. So I think both of them have always just tried really hard at things and done well. And I think part of it too is also just being surrounded by like a bunch of overachievers and not quite realizing that until you sort of, I don't know, get to university and you're like, oh, not everyone is like that. And I think too, I mean, honestly, probably a way to sort of maybe not fit in, but, you know, be liked and really just associating doing well with being a good person and what that means.
Yeah. I mean, I think that combination makes sense. So watching your parents, who your point of reference, be super hard workers, achieving individuals, contributing to the community. And then also you're plopped into a world where other people are doing the same thing. So of course you assimilate. I think that makes lots of sense.
Yeah. I also come from like a family of really high achievers. Like one of my cousins is an Olympian and now she's like starting like a soccer league in Canada for women. You know, super successful entrepreneurs and other business people on both sides of the family. And so I think honestly, part of it is just the norm. Like it's sort of this expectation. This is what you do and you're going to be good at things.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to talk about the dark side of entrepreneurship, but I do want to ask this question here because I like to poke
at things.
But what do you think, at least in your upbringing, that overachieving, go-getter, doer mentality, what was, I guess, the sides that people don't see or the shadow of that for you?
It's good and it's bad because I think, yeah, when it comes to entrepreneurship, it can push you to overwork, which in some ways is a good thing because it probably can get you ahead or, you know, it pushes your business faster forward compared to other people, but it definitely leads to burnout. Or I know for me, the thing I struggled with the most is being so hard on myself. And I found that actually with my previous business, Renew Retreats, I would get so much anxiety the day before a retreat. Like it was like crushing anxiety because I was so worried like the type of experience someone would have and if they would have a good time and how that reflected on me. And then I went to therapy and that got a lot better. So it's not so bad now. And I think too, Laura and I have talked about this. I think now we're just so busy that it actually forces you to really let go of some of that perfectionism because you just don't have time.
Yeah.
And it's good and it's bad. Like I think you get pretty good at doing stuff quickly that's like good enough. And so for me, it's almost now figuring out like, where are those moments where I really need to do like a really amazing job? And where are the other stuff where I can do a good job? And like, it's probably not as good as I want it to be, but you know, it's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm hearing, you know, where do you choose to surrender
totally
a little bit? And I think that's tough. And I put myself in the overfunctioning, high achieving category right there with you. So I can say this with confidence, but I mean, that's a piece that's tough is like, what can you surrender and let go and have be good enough? And it's not really a function of your worth or your contribution.
No. And often for me now, I find it's like my body that forces me to do it. It's like either like I'm going to get sick or I'm just tired. And I know in the past, I really would have pushed through that and kind of ignored it. And I'm sure it's a combination of like getting older, just being more aware of, it's just not worth it to do that anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my God, I can't wait to get talk to you about the psychological effects of burnout and running too hard. I mean, we'll get in there. You're already going there. I love it, but I have to hold myself back from
taking us
there. But there's a whole piece to that too, which I'm excited to unpack with you as well.
Yeah, totally.
But just to, I guess, bring it back to where we're at in, I guess, your story. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the musical background, you have great friends who staged that intervention for you. Thank them for that. But there's obviously a time period between you graduating and then you joining She Summits. And I know you talked about running another business in there.
Well, as a career coach, you'll probably be very entertained by this. So yeah, so I graduate from university and I'm in Sackville, New Brunswick. It's like this town of like 4,000 people, and I don't really know what to do. So I go back to Toronto, move back in with my parents after living on my own for 4 years. Obviously that is not fun. And also I think it was such a shock to the system being in such a creative space, like surrounded by musicians, you're doing music every day. I end up working for my dad in property management, which I absolutely hate it. Of course, now I can see all the skills that I gained. It was such valuable, like professional experience. At the time, I was so unhappy. And so for 2 years, I kind of went through this crisis of what I was going to do with my life. I didn't want to do music anymore. And I went through so many careers. I wish I could remember all of them, but it was like a nutritionist, a chef, like PR. I don't even know anymore. It was so many different things. Finally, my dad took me to a career coach, which he actually used to use for work when they let go people. So when they fired people, they would take people to this guy who would sort of like set them up for their next job. And I just remember it was like your standard kind of test that, you know, probably told me what I'd already figured out, like on Google. So it wasn't that helpful, but I think finally, I don't know why, but I think I just landed on applying to Masters of Communications because I was like, it's creative, but it seems way more practical. I applied to like Ryerson and SFU because they both had co-op programs. So I was like, oh, maybe that will be kind of, you know, a master's, but professional experience. And then that's what led me to Vancouver. I ended up getting into both and kind of randomly chose SFU because Vancouver seemed like a good change. And then after grad school, I just needed a job. And so I was applying to tons of jobs. And I think I'd always been attracted to the nonprofit space, just the idea of making a difference, impacting the community. And then I came across this job posting for the Alliance of Beverage Licensees. And I was like, what even is this? But I needed a job. And so I applied, ended up getting the job. And so it's an industry association that lobbies on behalf of the private liquor industry. And for anyone who knows me, I like barely drink. And so even at the time, people were like, this is bizarre. Like, I had never worked in hospitality, like, you know, had no idea what it meant to work in a bar or a liquor store. But I ended up staying there for 7 years, and it was actually an amazing experience because it was just me and my boss. And so as much as my job was like communications and membership, I did so many things like our financials, all sorts of marketing, sales, membership engagement. And I think I just really understood how a small business worked to be able to see kind of the operations side.
Can you talk? So when you, that amount of time that you spent at Alliance of Beverage Licenses, so 7 years is quite a long time. And yeah. I mean, you're one of those individuals who was able to apply your degree, I guess, to the job. But for folks who don't really quite understand what is communications and what is community management, how did that manifest in that job there? Like, what exactly did that look like and what skills did you build?
Yeah. So the great thing about a communications degree is no one knows what it is. And so it's really helpful when you apply for jobs.
You just like make it up.
Pretty much. But yeah, so for that role, I would say, so anything related to our communications I did. So in this case, it would be like the website. So doing all the website copy, actually managing the website, all the social media. So doing both like the social media strategy and then also like the copy and then the engagement. Because we were basically a lobbyist, we had like a lot of kind of like policy papers. And so a big part of our job was actually educating our members on policy changes. And so when COVID hit, so much of it was like basically writing newsletters to people on like the latest regulations. And so for me, it was often like interpreting policy docs, dumbing it down for lack of a better word, and putting it into a newsletter. from the engagement side, so for us, we were a membership organization. So really just finding ways to engage with our members and make sure they renew and keep their membership. So whether that honestly be super small stuff, like calling someone, staying in touch with people, honestly, even now, like remembering people's names and remembering like certain things about them, I can't believe what a difference that makes, even for She Summits. So we had an event at Fjällräven in Toronto on Saturday, and these two women who had come to our event at Athleta in Toronto like 3 months ago came, and I remember them, and they were shocked. They were like, I can't believe you remember us. And it's crazy what an impact that such that tiny thing makes. But yeah, and other things I would do for that job, we did a lot of different events to keep people sort of connected with each other. A big part of it was sort of the whole membership renewal. So I really learned, like, so for us, every year would really be reminding people of what we had done for them. So in that sense, kind of like policy wins, what the association is doing on your behalf. So many things, but I think I learned a lot about really building relationships and keeping people engaged in what you're doing and excited and seeing the value. Like, why do they want to pay to be a member? Like, what are you really doing for them?
It's just so interesting, because when you were describing some of the things you were doing, like translating policy, that's often really boring and dry, and how do you make it matter to people? And then how do you keep them aware of what's happening with your organization and why they should care? People do, I think, because I've worked for a lot of companies, but people sort of underestimate how important that, I'll call it, translator position is for your clients. Yeah. Because let's be real, most of the average person is not going to care what your organization is doing. Right. They don't know why they should care. And therefore you need someone to act as a linchpin. And it sounds like a lot of your job was that.
Oh, totally. Well, especially when you get into the liquor industry, like I think those people are so busy. And if you've ever received, probably not, but like a government briefing on COVID regulations, they are so badly written. If anyone is listening here from government, oh my God, get some better communications. It was brutal during COVID. I can't even tell you, like the wording was so confusing. And so half our job is like calling them to be like, what does this even mean? But the average business owner is not going to waste the time, right? To read that. And so, yeah, so much of those 3 years during the pandemic were really, yeah, honestly interpreting what things meant and kind of finding the loopholes, clarifying it for people. But it's so true. Like it's associations are like a whole industry into themselves that I had no idea existed until I worked for an association.
Yeah, absolutely. So crazy. There's so much in there we can unpack, but I want to get to the She Summit stuff too.
Yeah.
It's totally okay. So maybe one question before we move into the origins of She Summits and how you came on board and all that juicy stuff. Can you talk about, I guess, particularly at Alliance of Beverage Licenses, because it sounds like you did the bulk of your early career development there.
Totally.
What would you say you really learned about yourself in those early days? And I wonder if some of those themes from your childhood showed up there. So I'm curious.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, definitely a lot of the stuff that has kind of carried me into entrepreneurship, because there was only two of us and there was a lot of work to be done. Definitely starting to learn, I mean, honestly, to prioritize either what had to be done or what needed to be done really well and what could be done, like, you know, kind of okay, and get the job done. For sure, I think finding my voice, I was so naive to the hospitality industry and, you know, probably a big generalization, but when I first started, it was such an old boys club, like, and because we were dealing with the owners of kind of major liquor groups in BC. And so a lot of guys like in their 50s and 60s who very nice people, but just a very different generation. And so I think for me, really learning how to stand up to those people, especially people who were calling and like yelling at me about policy, to be able to hold my ground. And I think just, you know, kind of really know that I have a valuable opinion to share. That's definitely taken time to be able to kind of speak up in a meeting and know what I'm sharing is of value.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're talking about a theme that I hear so much with like the clients I career coach, but particularly with women.
Totally.
Very specifically is, how do you find your voice? How do you speak up? How do you advocate? And then it's also dependent on your upbringing and your personality too. And it's actually a lot tougher to do.
It's hard.
It's incredibly hard. And then add imposter syndrome, or if you feel fraud, There's so much to that.
Totally. And I think too, just being surrounded by such strong like male personalities makes it hard. Or also when there was such a big age gap, then thinking of me as like their daughter, which, you know, is like endearing and nice. And of course they treated me really well, but it's a bit different than being like a respected kind of colleague or professional. And I think probably the biggest other thing I learned was just relationships, and like in the hospitality industry, relationships are like gold. They're so important. And so for me, like, I think it just took it to a whole new level. Like, I mean, it's so common just to have a drink with someone. And I think even that I found so weird coming from like property management. Of course you're taking clients out, but it's very different than really having like a conversation with someone and building that relationship, which has really served me here.
I was going to say, an entrepreneur, I mean, people all the time in business talk about relationship building, but it's a skill to develop a business relationship with somebody. And also, like for me, I'm a sales coach as well. How do you come at relationship building where it doesn't feel highly transactional, even though both of you know you want to get something out of each other, right? There's still trust that needs to be built and likability that needs to be built. And what's your take on that?
Yeah, it's definitely been hard because especially when I had, same with She Summits and my previous business, Renew Retreats, I would have a lot of women come on hikes that became friends. And it was like this weird thing where I'm like, you've paid me to come on this and I know I've given you an experience and now we're friends. And obviously I'm not going to charge you to come on a hike with me, but it was kind of this weird sort of transition. But I think for me, I think really going into the relationship and genuinely wanting to know the person, of course, having at the back of my mind that, like I do want to make a sale or whatever the outcome of this may be, but, you know, actually caring about the person, taking the time to remember what they've told me, being interested in what they have to say. And then I think just being transparent about, you know, sort of maybe the purpose of why we're meeting, or even just if you ask someone up for coffee and maybe, you know, slipping that in kind of in the middle of the conversation as to why you actually wanted to meet with them.
Yeah. You're speaking my language. We should do a whole other episode on what great like selling, I won't even call it selling, but buying looks like for people, which is, and you said something that I'll underline, is genuine curiosity.
Yeah, so totally.
If I'm showing up to a coffee with you, it's not, I don't want to sell you anything. Yeah. I just want to understand you, what you need. Could there be a solution that we have that might work? And if it doesn't work, that's okay too.
Yeah. And I think honestly, that's been one of the most, maybe satisfying is the wrong word, but honestly, to go into a meeting and be like, this actually isn't the right fit. Like, She Summits can't help your company. it's actually nice to be in that position now for us to really be clear on who we can support and just to know if it's going to be an amazing fit or if it's not going to be.
Absolutely. But honestly, Danielle, you'd be surprised at how many people are unwilling to sort of say no, or that this is not the right fit because they feel like they need to push. But that's where the ickiness comes through. It's like, this feels gross because
you're trying to convince really learned me. That. Yeah. We can talk about that later if you ask about pivots. But my business partner and I, we were talking about that today as I was going through the questions. And I think one thing we're really proud of is that anything that started to feel icky, we just haven't done. And I think it's so powerful that we're aligned on that, is that we really feel similarly. If it just doesn't feel right or doesn't feel aligned, we're not going to do it. Because obviously we've learned the hard way when you force something and, you know, it kind of blows up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It feels gross on both ends. Yeah. I love that you brought that up. I mean, I wasn't expecting for us to have a conversation around like good sailing and selling and sales.
But me neither, since my background isn't in sales. And that's probably been one of the biggest challenges for us. So
Yeah. But it's so, I mean, we're going to get to the entrepreneurship stuff now, but it's so critical to running a good business, especially when you're an entrepreneur. So much of it is about building funnel and building clients and all that kind of stuff. So this is actually a really nice transition to talk about She Summit. So we had a snapshot of your early career days, and then clearly you made the choice to transition and sort of move on more into sounds like doing your own thing. But can you talk about where the transition into She Summits happened? How did it happen? How did you and Laura meet, that whole story?
So to make it super quick, kind of. So basically I was at Able. I turned 30 back a couple of years ago. I went to the Alps, had like a whole life crisis.
A crisis. Yeah. A 30 crisis.
Pretty much. And I did the Tour de Mont Blanc, which is like this 180-kilometer trek through the Alps. But the amazing thing is, if anyone has ever been there, is that basically you hike for a couple of hours and there's like, you have an espresso because there's like a lodge in the middle of nowhere. And then you like have a real meal and sleep in a real bed. And I came back from that and I was like, oh my God, we need to have this in BC. This is such a better way to hike than camp. And so basically launched this company, Renew Retreats, that was really meant to be kind of like premium hiking retreats for women, which later transitioned into being a lot more around outdoor education, getting women outside. But all to say, I knew of She Summits only because we had very similar audiences. So at the time, She Summits was actually created by a different woman, Dr. Carla Capito, back in 2019. And it was created as a film festival that really celebrated women in the outdoors. So it happened twice a year, and it was really a short film fest and all these different events around it. So like mountain bike clinics and like trail dig days, different workshops, this really amazing energy that brought all these sorts of people together. So I had only ever gone as just a guest. And then, so that was sort of 2019, 2020, they started this Cross Canada tour. And I think they got through one city before COVID hit. And so by this point, Carla decides that she wants out. And my now business partner, Laura, she had been involved as a volunteer and basically decided to take over the business. And so she took over ownership and I think sat on it for about a year. I mean, like all of us during the pandemic, it's sort of like, what is happening to the world? And so in 2021, meanwhile, I'm still working at Able, Renew Retreats, you know, I'm having a whole crisis around that. And plus COVID, hiking retreats, they're not really happening.
So many crises.
Pretty much, yes. Maybe we blow
crisis
maybe,
here, crisis there.
The word crisis is too generous. Yeah, so I honestly get an Instagram DM from Laura in July 2021. And I think I've probably spoken to her once and all it says is, hey, like I've been thinking about you. Would you have time for a phone call? I'm like, this is so random, but why not? And so we get on the phone and basically, I think we just were sort of talking about what we're both up to. And it just comes out that she's looking for a business partner. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like I was not expecting this at all. And so really she was trying to figure out what to do with She Summits. And I think both of us were coming from a similar position of like loving the outdoors, really loving community building, supporting women, but we're really tired of doing like individual events and trying to sell like a ticket to an individual and make a business out of that. Mm. And so we really just hit it off. And a couple of weeks later, I went up to her place in Squamish. I like barely know this woman. And I spent, I think, 3 or 4 days there. And we just kind of hashed out what we would sort of envision for the business. And so I think for both of us, really seeing how the pandemic impacted women, but also companies. So companies really struggling with employees' mental health mm-hmm. and well-being, keeping people engaged. How do you keep people connected? How do you retain people? And also, how do you really support women as they're leaving the workforce at higher rates than ever before? Huge rates of burnout among women, especially. Yeah, and that's sort of how the She Summits, I guess, 2.0 was born.
You know what I love about this, I'll call it origin story, even though this organization existed before you and yes. Laura walked into it, is often people think with entrepreneurship is like this amazing idea, and then you build this like robust business plan
yeah.
and then get some investors and it really takes off. But for the most part, it's stories like yours and Laura's where it's like serendipitously, we had a conversation, we kicked it off, we saw a need for people, specifically women. And then the market just really opened up. So something like the pandemic really catapulted the need for your organization. Yeah. But there's beauty in the simplicity of the story.
And it's funny you say that, because I think I struggled a bit with that in the sense that Renew Retreats was really born out of this like epic hike and like this sense of purpose. And this is what I need to do in the world. And so it's funny in some ways, like She Summits, not that it's been easier, but it sort of felt easier in the sense that it's kind of just this thing that like landed in my Instagram inbox. And yeah, it's just sort of organically been built, obviously very tied to Laura's and my sense of values and the impact that we want to make. But yeah, a much less grand, you know, sort of idea than you sometimes hear people share.
Yeah, but I love that. Because for people on you know, listening to this podcast about, I want to be an entrepreneur, or I have no idea where to start, which is often what we hear. Yeah. Stories like this should be inspiring because it just starts with a small thread that you pull. So, I mean, let's start with when you and Laura got together and essentially she inherited a business and a business model. Yeah. What were the early days for you two? Like what, you know, that first year that you two were working together, what was the priorities? What was on your mind?
How did you just figure it out? Yeah. So basically, so July 2021, we met. August, we sort of, I went up to her place, and then basically I quit my job in October. And then by January 2022, I was like a full-time entrepreneur.
Let's go.
So, yeah. So I'd say 2022 was definitely figuring out that, like, just, I mean, I'd had a business before, but I had actually never been able to solely work on a business and not have a job at the same time. And I think for Laura and I, it was really just figuring out what we wanted to do. So we kind of had this vague idea, but we still really had to figure out, like, well, what did the programming look like? Where are we going to host this? Like, is it on a platform? Who is going to buy this? Like, how are we going to sell it? I would say so much of figuring it out. And obviously still now, you know, every day we're changing things and still figuring it out. But I think year one was like really lame. The groundwork and sort of the foundation of what the business was going to look like. And also, I guess, probably partway through the year, we did a round of funding. And so that was like a huge endeavor. Neither of us had ever raised money before. And that is just like a whole other language, learning how to talk to investors, make a pitch deck, pitch to investors. So that was like a good, probably like 4 or 5 months process.
How did you find the energy and the resiliency and the commitment to muster through that? And I imagine to not being able to pay yourself all too much, because it's not like you have this huge volume of clients since you're figuring out your offering. How did you work through that? Because that's crazy. That's a crazy amount of work for an unclear payoff, in quotations.
Yeah, I know. I think about this often. Actually, we were talking about this today, Laura and I. I actually think the first year was kind of like this honeymoon phase, because I'm on this high of quitting my job. We're having so much fun. Everything, like, anytime someone said yes to us, it was like a massive win. Versus now, we're like, okay, that's great. And we move on. I think it was actually year two where reality really sets in and you're still not making that much money. And you really have to think, like, is this worth it, but like, is this going to work out? So I try to be really careful of how much I slip into that. Is this going to work out? And I think too, there's just so many weird serendipitous things that have happened that I just believe that wouldn't be happening if this wasn't going to work out. So that's what I tell myself, and that's, you know, comforting. But I mean, as far as more practical things, one of our non-negotiables is celebration. And so really being conscious of celebrating stuff, taking the time for rest. I'm so grateful I have a business partner that loves the outdoors and really respects. I think both of us respect our need to like go for a run or take a break and go for a walk or get outside. In September, after we closed our funding round, we actually went on a 5-day trail running retreat up in the mountains in the middle of nowhere, which felt like ridiculous at the time. And we're like, should we even be doing this? This is so irresponsible. But then we came back and we felt so refreshed. Like, you just really need the break. And so that's something I really learned, because I got so burnt out with Renew retreats, is that really taking that break. And I think just having, whether it be those kind of daily routines in place that are really going to support my mental well-being, or whether it be kind of, yeah, those quarterly kind of longer breaks and bigger vacations, if you can somehow manage it.
Yeah. And I imagine for you and Laura, it's like practicing what you preach.
That's like the benefit of our business, even today. So I got back from Japan a week ago, then we flew out to Toronto, and we've had like 3 days of really intense events. And I'm sitting in the car this morning with her on the way to our workshop, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so tired. Like, I really don't want to talk to people. And she's like, you can't get burnt out, because that's
our whole business model. Exactly. Our whole business model about anti-burnout. And then if the one of the co-founders burnout, but it's such a great reminder for you too, right?
It really is. And yeah. I think one of the best compliments we've ever received from someone is one of our members said in like a written testimonial, she was like, Laura and Danielle really practice what they preach. Like, they live out the values of what they're teaching. And that means so much more to me than like, I think anything else someone could say. And so, yeah, I think honestly, keeping that in mind, and I mean, therapy helps too, but it's definitely tough. I don't think I realized what, I think we can swear on this, like what a mind fuck being an entrepreneur is, and how much, when I launched my first business, I realized how much a lesson it was in personal growth. And I think once you quit your job, that just adds a whole new level to, yeah, like the mental resilience you need to make it through.
Oh my God. Well, you've removed the safety net.
Yeah. And I will say, like, you know, I should also acknowledge I have immense privilege. Like my parents are very supportive, and I know that's always like I'm not going to end up on the street. Like, you know, and obviously I have a great education, so I do keep that in mind, that obviously my situation is still probably better than other people. But it is tough because I'm also single. Like I don't have a spouse or a partner, and I have a lot. I know you and I have talked about this. I know a lot of entrepreneurs, and no shade to them, whose spouses have supported them throughout probably 3 to 4 years of building their business. And that's just not a reality for me.
100%. I mean, I have to say, Daniel, you can have an immense amount of privilege and support and a little bit of a safety net, but it doesn't make it hard. It doesn't make it any less hard or scary to leave
No,
your
and it's
job
so
and make that
relative,
leap.
right? Like
It's so relative.
we talk about this a lot, Laura and I, because we have obviously have loans and investors, but it's not a massive amount of money. And we talk to people who owe hundreds and thousands of dollars, and I could not stomach that. So I think everyone is so relative to what your safety net is, and yeah, what's going to cause you to really freak out.
100%. Yeah, I mean, you again, we need to do a whole there's so many topics emerging from this. There's a whole other
Totally.
episode around like risk tolerance and people's thresholds and all that
And
kind of stuff.
even gender, I think there's so much difference
Yes.
between women and men, and when it comes to risk tolerance, and that's why women are such good business owners.
Plug.
Just throw that
Just
in
a
there.
small plug.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't want to get too much into the nitty-gritty of your business model, even though I personally find that super fascinating, but I do
Yeah.
want to ask, you know, I think the reason why part of why I wanted to interview you, I think the topic around mental health, wellness, anti-burnout is so relevant and it's such a hot topic in corporate nowadays.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering for you being on the other end of it, running workshops, hearing people talk about how burnout's affected them, what are some of the themes you've heard? Because I feel like people listening into this want to really know if other people feel the same
Yeah.
way or go through the same thing.
Well, that's probably the biggest thing, is that you're not alone. That is honestly the biggest thing we hear from people, is that, oh my God, I thought I was the only one who experienced this. They feel like they can't talk about it at work because there's so much stigma. It's like, oh, if I'm burnt out, I must be weak, or I can't handle the workload, or whatever negative thing you want to say about yourself. So I think for other women, creating that space where they can really talk about whatever they're facing, knowing they're not alone. But I think also for us, we really try to like not be like toxic positivity, obviously not, but really try to focus on the positive and have that sort of optimism and hope. Because I think there's a lot of burnout workshops on there that are like, these are the signs and symptoms of burnout. And it's kind of like fear mongering of, you know, what it could do to you, versus we're much more like, yes, that's there, but like, what can we do to add more joy? Or how can you take off that pressure from yourself? Or how can you actually make time for self-care? And I think too, really just building into our programming everything that supports us. So like community, connection, getting outside in nature, taking time for yourself, those are all things that have such a positive impact on your mental well-being.
100%. And what's your, this is an interesting discussion I had with a friend. What's your stance on how do we build resiliency in a world where people are feeling very fragile and at their capacity, but also help teach people to make room for the feelings that are uncomfortable and still being able to push through challenge? Because this is often a thing I grapple with clients is like when do you just when is it okay and does it make sense for you to push through versus when is this a really like a mental health crisis? Because you also there's the flip side of you know talking too much about burnout and wellness where it's like are we overextending on that where
Totally.
people aren't building that resiliency arm. I'm just curious about you, like, what do you think about that being sort of
It's
an
so
expert in this
tricky.
space?
It makes me think of when I used to lead more people on hikes, because I would grapple with this. I just remember on my first retreat I ever did, there was this girl who we did Mount Gardner on Bowen Island, if anyone's ever done it. It's a pretty hard hike. And there was this part at the end where she is really struggling. But you can kind of tell when someone is like physically like they're not well, or they're just kind of mentally caving. And so I could tell that it was just a mental thing. Like she physically was going to be okay. And so to be able to push her to keep going. And of course she's fine and she's super happy when she does it. But I think for people, it's really being able to tune into yourself, like having that self-awareness of like I think to myself, like when am I just kind of feeling demotivated, or I don't know, having negative thoughts come up and I can actually just push through, or when am I physically tired and my body's telling me like you need to take a break. But It's really tough. I think honestly, doing long distance, like athletics, for lack of a better word, has really helped with that resilience. So I went through a period where I ran like a lot of marathons and did like an ultra marathon. And I still love to hike and run long distance, but that teaches you so much about how far you can push your body. Mm. So I probably lean on that more than I know. Yeah. I think it's really getting to know yourself and being honest with yourself. Are you just making an excuse and kind of, I don't know, pushing back or staying in your comfort zone, or do you legitimately need a break?
Totally. And it's so hard to tell, but I think you say such an important piece around self-awareness, because I think resiliency, mental health, wellness, it's very personal.
Yeah.
And it's not going to look the same on everybody, because everyone's context is different. Everyone's triggers are different.
Not at all. And that's something that I find really hard is even, I don't know, like maybe it's just getting older, more self-aware, but I feel like I can't push myself as hard as I used to. And even then I started to judge myself, but then I'm like, maybe I felt just as crappy before, but I was just so oblivious to how I felt that I just kind of kept on pushing through. So
yeah, ignorance. Totally.
Yeah. And often I think you do learn the hard way, at least for me, unfortunately, you kind of do learn like, when have you pushed too far? And at least hopefully, you know, for next time that if you start to feel those symptoms, that it'd be better to take a break.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also too, I don't know if you, I'm sure you've experienced this, but I think there's different types or styles of burnout for as sure. well. There's like the common yeah. one where it's just volume and intensity, which is, I think, the one we all know, but there's yeah. also one where it's like overstimulation or misalignment with your values or your strengths that could be equally as toxic as
that's the thing. Like I've had like friends and different mentees who basically they're so burnt out at work, and of course one thing is the workload, but then you start hearing about like the toxic boss or like the work that they're doing that they really hate and feel so against what they stand for, and you sit there thinking like, this is not going to get better. Like yeah, you can get rid of work and you can delegate stuff, but you're still gonna feel like probably shit about the work that you're doing. So
yeah, it's just the energy depletion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super interesting. And like, I'm really curious about this too. So this is controversial to say, but oh, you know, no. since COVID, oh no, since COVID, you know, a lot of companies have really amped up, you said this earlier, their wellness programs.
Yeah.
Right? Let's toss more money at therapy. Let's do this, do that. Drinks in the room. I'm making this stuff up, but you know what I'm trying to say. But you know, what's interesting is at least my perception of things when working with clients is that I feel like that's a band-aid solution for a yeah. lot of companies, because it's an easier fix to throw more money at, in quotations, wellness practices and benefits. So yeah. I'm just like curious, what's your opinion about that? Like, how do we help companies better solve the root of this stuff as opposed to just throwing more money in the benefits package?
Yeah. Like I think for us, we really come at it from the perspective, I guess a couple of things. Like, so for us, engagement is such a big deal. Like I think a lot of those programs often employees don't know about, don't use, don't really care. And so for She Summits, when we work with a company, obviously it's in our best interest if their employees actually use what we're doing. And so we put so much effort into keeping people engaged. But also for us, we do like monthly workshops, offer different tools and challenges to really give people skills and help them build a toolkit that's going to help them reduce stress and burnout that they can use throughout, you know, the rest of their lives and careers. So really providing people with, yeah, I would say like education on how to make lasting change. Of course, therapy, I wouldn't call that a band-aid solution, but yeah, other stuff that you mentioned, I agree. Like it can be a nice to have, but I also think sometimes people see through that. And so that's something we've actually had to really work through, is how do we go into a company and really present ourselves to the employees as someone that's, you know, going to legitimately care about them. It's going to be sort of this unique individualized experience. It's not just another wellness program that their companies decided to buy and kind of placate them. So
yeah, absolutely. And I wonder too, again, your opinion on this, but so you're the way She Summits work is you guys go direct to the individual. So the person this is impacting, which is typically in the employee, but in an organization, in a business context, how do you also infiltrate?
Infiltrate. For lack of
a better word, infiltrate. But honestly, like the directors, your managers, you know, the people who coach and mentor people on a day-to-day who now have to grapple with mental health and wellness being a lot more normalized. Like, I don't know She Summits may not do this right now, but what's your thought on how do you like penetrate that line too, right?
So we actually do both. So we do sell to individuals, but we also would sell to a company. So typically that would be speaking to like director of HR, like someone to do with people and culture, DEI, operations, whatever. And that's actually been the really hard part. And the biggest learning is that, yeah, it's how do you get that person to care? And so we've tried many different things. Typically, we have the most success when someone has come to an event, and either whether it's been like a hike, time in nature, some sort of workshop, and they've really experienced what it's like to be surrounded by those other women and just kind of felt the benefits of the type of work that we do. But yeah, that's been the biggest learning, and it's an ongoing thing to just get that person on the phone, on a Zoom call, and how do you really convey to them that this is something different and unique that's going to support their employees. And it's not something also that's going to take up a lot of time for them. So it's definitely a work in progress. It's like, cause once you find that champion in the organization, then that makes a world of difference. They care so much more about really pushing your program through. So we've also tried different things like using really engaged members, getting them to connect us with the right person at the company, really setting up that champion with kind of some tools and resources they could give to, you know, their director of HR, whoever would make the buying decision.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I think that's really smart moves for you guys as a business. But to me, like, that's the interesting piece is She Summits, I know you work with both, but you know, individuals is where you see the most like one-on-one return. But with corporations, it's the people who make decisions, it's the influencers who's going to help create systemic change that's actually going to solve for the pain point you guys are looking at, right?
Totally.
And but that it's from a selling, marketing, business perspective, it's tough. That is a hill to climb.
It is super hard. And I think a lot of people told us that at the beginning, and we're like, meh, whatever. How hard can it be? And you know, like 2 years later, we're like, okay, we get it now.
You're because it's B2B, business to business. And it's a lot more complex, a lot more people to maneuver, a lot more people to
and the sales cycle. Oh my God, long. That has been probably the biggest eye opener. Is like, you know, it's great. Like 6 to 8 months from now, all these people, you know, they suddenly come out of the woodwork and they're ready to buy. But yeah, it takes a long time sometimes.
Yeah. When are you going to sign? It's been 8 months. I know exactly how you feel. Okay. Slight deviation, but I'm also really happy we went there. From like, I guess a futuristic standpoint, cause we're hearing a lot about, I mean, you guys have an online platform, you have over 500 members. I mean, clearly people are eating it up. They're getting a lot out of what you offer. But when you and Laura think about the future of your business, what does that look like? Is it really penetrating that corporate level? Is it offering other programs that are extensions of wellness? What does that look
like? Yeah, like I think our sort of immediate plans over the next couple of years is to be really solidly across Canada. So what we've learned is that we really started off as this hybrid online in person, and we'll always have that online component, but people want in person. That is so clear to us, especially over the last 6 months. That's what people are so engaged in. They're coming to, they're coming back. And so I think really over the next year, it's getting super, you know, continuing obviously Vancouver, but being really established in Vancouver, Victoria, Ottawa, Toronto, and Calgary, and having people there to actually facilitate that in-person sort of connection every month. And then kind of from the corporate side, I mean, really just continuing. We obviously have kind of like dream clients we'd love to have as a sort of big clients. I think from a business perspective, getting to the place where we're signing a really big corporate client kind of every quarter that sort of carries you into the next quarter versus, you know, kind of knocking down doors every day. That would be a big one. And yeah, I mean, just sort of some dream brand partnerships. I think I mentioned we're doing this Cross Canada event series with Fjällräven, an outdoors brand. So that's been amazing to really kind of kick off that Cross Canada brand partnership. And I mean, I think eventually, like Laura and I, of course, we love working, but we really designed this business to work for us. And so both of us love the idea of being able to work abroad in a couple of years, having a small team, but I don't think either of us have really ever dreamed of having this massive team, but really kind of 8 to 10 women that are really, you know, on board with She Summits. And
that's really exciting. Sort of like a boutique, operation, which I think is very possible.
Yeah. Not to say, like, I have a feeling probably that would be like 8 to 10 full-time staff. And then the people who would be doing sales and in-person events would probably be contractors or some sort of commission basis. Sure. So not including those, but Yeah, I mean, I think we love, honestly, freedom and flexibility. And I think that's why a lot of people get into entrepreneurship, is eventually to have that freedom to really live the type of life that you want to live.
100%. So again, you've given me such beautiful segue into then the next sort of questions before we sort of round this out. But I have a couple that are a little bit different. So one is, I asked this from my last guest, her name was Briggs. She runs a local dance studio here in Vancouver. Nice. But I had asked her, and I want to ask you this, you know, entrepreneurship is this really, it's incredibly glorified. I think particularly nowadays where people are sick of working for other people, they're like, I don't want to, I just want to work for myself. And so what they see is freedom and flexibility, and I get to be my own boss and all these things, which I think is true. And it sounds like for you, it's definitely been true. Sure. But what are the sides of that people misconceive or underestimate that you put out there for people who are considering this?
So Laura and I, we were talking this over lunch today. We were having like a heyday, making a list of all the bad things. And I'm sure the people around us are like, oh my God, like what happened to these girls? But I would say probably the biggest thing is the amount of stress. I really don't think I consider the amount of stress, and not in the sense of like workload, but I think just you can't turn it off. Of course, I've become better at like compartmentalizing and going outside and finding activities that turn my mind off. But I think just even going to Japan, honestly, of course, Laura does an amazing job holding down the fort, but it's at the back of my mind that I'm not reaching out to clients and like there's no new business coming in if I'm not doing it. I think that's been a really tough transition that in the past, I mean, as we talked about being an overachiever, you do really well at your job, you always get paid and you probably get rewarded for it, versus for entrepreneurship, you could be doing really well and it's not paying off. And so that's been probably the most frustrating thing, is to feel like you're putting so much work in. And I think a lot of the first kind of 3 years are figuring out what's really going to work. And often that takes time, but it can be a lot of hard work with little payoff until the end.
Absolutely. And you said a little bit earlier around celebration and how important that is. Mm. I think if people are considering a leap into entrepreneurship or year one, two, three of business and are really grinding, I think, you know, on Instagram, it's like hit 100K or, you know, all that crap on there.
Totally.
But really it's about how do you find those incremental places to celebrate, to give yourself praise and recognition for growth that may not be tangible, like a revenue number.
Yeah.
It's super important.
That's probably been another thing you touch on, is that I think the first year, any sort of win, we were like, oh my God. And then I think the second year reality hits. And now I have to be so careful that if it's not a revenue win, I often won't celebrate, versus I'm like, a year ago, I would have thought this was amazing. And so really being conscious of that. But definitely every quarter, we actually try to set kind of like, what are things that we would celebrate if we achieved? And it's not always monetary. Like it could be like partnerships or, I don't know, just cool people saying yes or doing a cool event. So it definitely takes effort, but yeah, really being intentional about celebrating those all sorts of things that are not just money.
And then I know we've talked a lot about like the operations of She Summits and your business model, but I'm also curious about the interpersonal side of it. So you've touched on a lot of it, you know, like overachieving and self-critique, but you also have a business partner. So that's the other part of it too, is like you and Laura being a fairly new relationship when you first started.
Yeah.
How do you two manage the dynamics, how you both operate differently? I'm sure you have different stressors and different triggers. What's that like?
Yeah, totally. It's funny. Like I had like a very brief communications consulting business, like right after grad school, that I started with a really good friend of mine, and we no longer speak. So that can tell you a bit about that. But it's interesting because Laura and I weren't friends when we started the business because we didn't know each other. And so I think that actually played to our benefit, that you weren't going into business with a really good friend. Not to say you can't do it. I know lots of people that have. I think for us, being super aligned on our values, I know that's where past business partnerships have not worked out, is kind of having either different ideas of what you want your future to look like, what you want the business to look like, and also just kind of your personal values and how you want to live. Yeah, and I think both of us are way better tuned now when the other person is stressed. And so I think just being aware of that and paying attention to what kind of maybe sets the other person off, or what, yeah, I think just knowing when that other person really needs a break and kind of stepping in for each other. But it definitely takes work. Like I think it's probably my most important relationship in my life, and it affects so many things.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, like even outside of an entrepreneurship context or co-founder context, I'll call it relational emotional work is so important to good business.
Yeah. And I think too, like we talk, we're so, I think, because both of us have done stuff on our own before. And I think it also helps actually that we've seen how hard it is to do it alone. And so I think having that gratitude for each other and just there's so many things we've gone through that we were like, I would have stopped by now if it wasn't for you and having that other person.
It's so crazy, Danielle, that we are already at the end.
I know, that flew by.
Which is great. It means it's been meaty. There were so many pockets I feel like we didn't get to explore.
Next time.
But I want to kind of close this off with, I guess, more personal questions around your career and transitions, yeah, because that's really why I started this podcast in the first place, is that people could hear, what does it feel like on the other side of change, and what does transition look like, and how can people navigate some of those sticky moments themselves? Yeah. So here's my, I guess, ending questions for you. One is, when you look at the, I guess, arc of your career to date, what have you been personally the most proud of?
Yeah, I think probably it was all those big leaps that I took. So whether it be leaving Toronto, moving to Vancouver, knowing no one, and going into a degree that I knew nothing about, for sure starting Renew Retreats, that was absolutely terrifying. That was probably the first time that I really had to put myself out there. I hosted like a big launch party, and I remember thinking like, what if no one shows up, and like, what are people going to think of this thing that is so personal to me? And I mean, quitting my job, I think all those were pretty, pretty massive things. And I can definitely be proud of them and look back on them.
Yeah. Those are massive leaps in such a short amount of time too.
I know, you know, I like to like get shit done and yeah.
Right. It's like usually it takes people 25 years to do just two of those things, but that's, yeah. I mean, that's amazing.
Well, I think too, like I should add, like, I think it is helpful that like, I'm still like, you know, I'm like, I think I'm 34, like I don't have kids, I don't own a house. And so for me, that was honestly a big reason with quitting my job. It was sort of like, if I'm going to do this, it has to be now. Like, this is like the lowest commitments I'm probably ever going to have again. And so, you know, either got to do it now, or it's just going to get harder the older that I get.
Yeah. I think that makes so much sense. Absolutely. Okay. I mean, those are amazing things to be proud of, a lot of stuff in there. And then the other question I have is, you know, for people listening, or like, I'm feeling stuck, I don't know what to do, the work that I'm doing feels misaligned, you know, what are some of the things you would share about what you learned on your career story, like you impart to them?
Yeah, I would say just start doing kind of small things to figure out what would feel better aligned. So for me, actually, I went through a period where I listened to like a lot of podcasts. So if you're interested in entrepreneurship, honestly, listening to business podcasts or listening to entrepreneurship podcasts, I read so many personal development books. I mean, for me, I always come back to the outdoors. I think being able to go on a hike or go on a walk or a run is so good to clear your head and really just, I think, reconnect back into what you want. But it took a lot of time. Like, I think even between the Alps and launching Renew Retreats, that was probably 6 months of like thinking about it, not really knowing what to do. But yeah, I think the biggest advice would be to kind of start exploring those things that maybe pique your interest a little, because I don't think you're ever going to know fully until you try something. And also, I know in the past, I've always been so worried that if I make one decision, it's forever. And so kind of taking that pressure off, and it's not easy, but it's easy, and it's not to pivot, I think, to go one direction and decide it's not for you and be okay with that.
I think you said a couple of great things in there that I hear all the time from clients is, one, how do you make the starting line manageable and small?
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be at the dream end state tomorrow.
No, and that's so unrealistic.
It's like, so I think unrealistic.
My favorite, there's so many Instagram memes that are like, you know, this was like an overnight success that took like 10 years.
God, I unfollow those people. There's many. Just unfollow them. I'm like, you're not realistic enough for me. Absolutely. But I think there's another thing you said in there, which was around, damn it, it was at the tip of my brain. I'm like, you said two pieces that were so good.
Like not being afraid to pivot or things are permanent.
That, there we go. Thank you so much. The permanency, that's the other piece, is when people make decisions, it feels dire and high stakes. And I don't want to diminish that feeling, because I think
totally
it could feel that way. But also, no choice is typically irreparable. You can usually go back, and it's especially with the entrepreneurship leap. But so for you, when you decided to leap, you probably could have gone back into corporate if you really wanted to.
Totally.
Right?
It's so true. And I think that's where that resilience comes back too. Cause I feel like even your capacity for change, you slowly get bigger. So like, I didn't just like start a business and quit my job. It took time to kind of like dabble in entrepreneurship and then something failed and then sort of do a little bit bigger and then finally leave my job. But I think, yeah, honestly, building that capacity to take on that change.
Absolutely. Which is why when we did your panel around like building a hustle while you hold on a job, I think is one of the smartest things you can probably do.
Yeah. Which, I mean, 2 years in, I recommend it. So
yeah, right. It's like, I still recommend it.
Yeah. I still recommend it.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. And then the last piece is that, I mean, people listen to this and like, She Summit sounds super cool. I want to get involved or be part of the membership or, you know, have a coffee chat or whatever that looks like.
Totally.
How can people find you, get involved?
Yeah. So for She Summits, shesummitsforum.com, She Summits Forum on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. You can find me on Instagram at, oh my God, I think it's Danielle LaRue. If you search that, I'll pop up.
Like, or what's find my me Instagram? On LinkedIn.
I can't even remember. Find me on LinkedIn, Danielle LaRue. I'm always happy to chat about all these things.
I love it. All right. Well, Danielle, thank you so much again for being here. And folks, until next time, see you later.